and so the die is cast. Krishna has failed in his peace mission, and Duryodhana too, in his attempt to try and capture Krishna, has totally failed. It never got off the ground. Krishna, in a last attempt to salvage something out of the negotiations, privately has a very friendly meeting with Karna and tells Karna that in fact he was born out of wedlock to Kunti and therefore he is the senior Pandava. If he changes sides and fights for the Pandavas, they without doubt, and he will ensure that it will happen, will be made king of them, and after the battle, which they will lose, the Kauravas will lose, Krishna is positive over this, he will be the king of everything. But Karna sticks to the honourable nature that he has by saying he cannot do this. He knows he's going to lose the battle, but he's obligated to Duryodhana as a suitor, as a lower caste. Duryodhana gave him esteem, he gave him his friendship and his trust, and there's no question he cannot actually change sides, although he knows that finally this will be the end of his life by the time the battle is ended. As Karna leaves Krishna's chariot, they embrace and agreed that the battle will start within 7 days. Just before he goes, he asks Daruka to take him to his auntie, Auntie Kunti, the mother of the Pandavas. He enters her lodgings with his two commanders, Satyakri and Kritavarman, sitting side by side. He asks her first of all, he tells her the outcome of the negotiation. She's not surprised at all. She knew that Duryodhana would be obdurate, and she emphasizes to Krishna that her sons should fight. She's very concerned that the compassionate side of Yudhishthira will come out and he'll demur from fighting. There's a little more to be said. As a last message, she sends her greetings to her sons. So Krishna walks around in respect and with his two commanders enters his chariot with Daruka, and they're off to Upper Plavia, the capital of the Matsya, where the Pandavas are awaiting. Meanwhile, Vidura comes to Kunti and he commiserates at the failure of the talks and is full of foreboding of the future. He says he can't sleep, and she says she's in the same position. They know what's going to happen, and they know that the cause of the Kauravas and the death of all the relations will come about. So Kunti says that she will have a last chance, and she tells Jura of the birth of Karna to her out of wedlock. So the following morning, she goes down to the Ganges, where it is known that Karna says his prayers at dawn to the sun, facing east with a loincloth into the Ganges up to his knees, chanting with his hands above his head. She quietly waits until he's finished his prayers, which is some time. He waits really for the sun to come round to warm his back. And then he turns round, and sees him and asks what she wants and what he can do for her. Well, she doesn't waste any time with pleasantries. She explains straight away that, in fact, Karna is her firstborn son. And she goes through the story, which I'm sure you know well, how her father, in fact, made her become, in effect, a foster daughter to his brother, her uncle. And there, in fact, she for a long time, she looked after the grumpy sage Dvashish. Remember, to drop of a hat, you get a curse if you weren't careful with him. But she looked after him very well, looked after all his wants, food, comforts, and so on. And he gave her the mantra, he gave her the boon that at any time she could call upon any of the cosmic gods and have a child by them. This really, out of childish curiosity, she did with Surya, the sun god. She had a baby out of wedlock before she'd got married. She's highly embarrassed, obviously, because society-wise, it would be a disgrace. So she put the little baby inside a wicker basket, and it floated down. And Adhirata, the suitor, and Radha, his wife, found it and brought Karna up as their own child. Well, she tells Karna this, but Karna doesn't let her off the hook. He says to her, well, now you tell me at the last moment when the battle is about to be joined and you want me to change sides and join the Pandavas, but what have you done for me through the whole of my life? You really have acted almost as better than my worst enemy could have done. You took away my status, you took away my standing, I was classed as a suitor. With Duryodhana, he relies entirely upon me. He's looked after me, he's given me status, he's given me wealth, and I have treated him as a friend and told him I would always be his friend. It is far too late to even for me to consider changing sides. But what he did say, he said to her that, in actual fact, your supplications to me will not go in vain. You know, I will help you to the extent that I will not kill Yudhishthira, I will not kill Bhima, I will not kill Nakula or Sahadeva. I will only fight with Arjuna, and either I will kill him or he will kill me. So when the battle is finished, you will still have five sons. Whether it's me or whether it's Arjuna, fate will say. Kunti could see that there was no more to be said in the matter. So she embraced him and she wished him well and she reminded him not to forget her promise, the promise to her by him in relation to her other sons. And of course, when Krishna got back to Upaplavya, the Pandavas wanted a complete debriefing from him. But at this stage, I wanted actually to share with you some of the thoughts of Sri Aurobindo upon the situation as it stands at the moment. If you remember, his political background very much coloured some of the questions that were bound to be raised at this stage. And it was really the words of Gandhari, the Queen, at the peace discussions, negotiations, that brought this consideration to me, and that what she said in effect was to Duryodhana, she was saying just the same as the others, make peace, it's a benefit to you, it's a benefit to everyone, but you, that's Duryodhana, would never be able to do this until you have, and the Mahabharata loves this phrase, control of your senses. To Duryodhana, she was saying, you just can't take over a kingdom, especially a kingdom, the mighty kingdom like the Kurus, with anger, with greed, and all these negative aspects. You've got to have control of your emotions, you've got to have inner wisdom, you've got to be able to have that inner balance within yourself to have command and ability to rule such a vast nation, the Kurus. And of course, it's got to be done in a manner conforming to the law, conforming to Dharma. She points out that if you don't have this, how on earth are you going to control and get the best benefit from all your advisors? And this actually came through from Sri Aurobindo's assessment of the unusual situation where you have such men of high moral tone and justice as Bhishma, Drona and Kripa fully knew the justification that Yudhishthira had to claim his kingdom, yet they stuck with the Kauravas when it came to the battle. And it's this that Sri Aurobindo picks up on. He points out that they will know full well, that's Bhishma and Drona and Kripa, that if Yudhishthira will win the war, and they certainly expect that he will win the war, then they will have to rub shoulders and share power with the Matsya and with the Panchalas. Now, those leaders on their own just hadn't got the capacity, the capability, and the respect and standing to be a world-dominating nation as the Kurus. And they would have to accept the rule of those lesser kings because they would be with the conquering armies, they would be the lieutenants of Yudhishthira. So to ensure that this didn't happen, they stuck with the Kauravas. Aurobindo says that, and you can pick it up quite easily in the text, in fact, that if they and Ashwataman and the other great leaders had stood aloof, and actually Ashwataman was very friendly with Arjuna, and he had this moralistic side to him, although he was a pain in the neck when it came later on, a real, real monster. Now, these people had stood, and they're perfectly justified in doing so, saying this is not a cause that we want to be involved with, we're not going to fight, there would be no battle. Duryodhana just would not have been able to continue with the fight. The other fascinating theory that Sri Aurobindo had was that of the major nations that weren't strong enough to take the dominance away from the Kuru nation that joined the Kauravas, they did so on the basis that they knew Duryodhana, if he were to win the battle, would only be emperor for a day. In other words, he wouldn't last long because, as Kunti, his mother, said, he hadn't got the makeup to handle such a vast nation and administer it. So they would be able to break the power of the Kurus, and they themselves might well be able to step into the shoes and become top dog, the number one nation. Well, if you have been, thanks very much for listening.